Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. It's a great time in the world because we are facing a brand new decade, but there's also turmoil and chaos and opportunity. We've got a lot to talk about and an absolutely astonishing guest today on the Real Estate Guys radio program. If you've been listening to the Real Estate Guys for a while, then you've heard about the legendary Investor Summit. Simply put, it's the highest level event we do, and the content, faculty, and attendees are amazing. If you're serious about taking your real estate investment to the next level, consider joining us. You'll spend more than a week with like-minded investors, world-class educators, and real-world professionals, and you'll have a blast. It all begins June 11th, 2020 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Visit realestateguysradio.com and click the tab that says Summit to learn more and get on the advance notice list. We'll spend 2.5 days on land learning and networking, then jump aboard a luxury cruise ship for more classes, roundtable discussions, great dinner conversations, and a ton of fun. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click Summit and make plans to hang out with the Real Estate Guys and an all-star faculty on the 18th annual Investor Summit at Sea. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, our financial strategist and co-host, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
Oh my gosh, this year has started with a bang. Literally, there is so much going on, and how do we make sense of any of it?
Yeah, you know, as real estate investors, we operate in a system. And the system is a financial system, it's a political system, some of it is mechanical, some of it is emotional, some of it is how people are responding to what's going on in the world. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt are things that exist right now because there's a lot of instability. There's instability in the financial system. I think anybody looking can see that we're at bubble highs in certain things. We're very long in the tooth in this recovery. Statistically, it says that recession should be hitting the United States of America at any time. You've got record debt around the world. You've got the Fed doing things it's never done before at a scale that it's never done before. And then you've got all of this geopolitical unrest. And because it's in the Middle East, it has to do with oil. And oil affects everything. Oil is the currency of economy, if you will. In other words, there's no production, there's no economic activity without energy. And when the cost of energy goes up, the cost of doing everything else goes up. And so there's this gigantic ripple effect. So there's a lot of factors going on in the world right now that investors, paper asset investors especially, because those markets are so volatile, but even lowly Main Street real estate investors need to be paying attention because these things have the potential to affect credit markets. They have the potential to affect interest rates, two things that real estate investors depend very much on. They have the potential to affect the economy in general, which will affect employment, which will affect tenants and their ability to rent, their ability to accept rental increases. So there's just a lot to talk about. So it's exciting because anytime there's chaos, the flip side of chaos is opportunity, but you can't ignore what's going on in the world and expect to navigate it.
There's an old Chinese proverb that says, may you live in interesting times, which they actually refer to as the Chinese curse.
Yes.
And you sent me an article just a few days ago that talked about helicopter money being here and how the Fed is monetizing billions in debt. And you pointed out that some folks had commented that our friend, Dr. Chris Martinson, had come out with an article a few weeks before that saying essentially the same thing.
Yeah. So part of what I love about what we do, Robert, is that we are just connected to these super smart people. So part of being prepared for come what may is having access to intellectual capital, intellectual resources. And so, you know, we love to share our great ideas, but we've been very fortunate to be surrounded and have good relationships with lots of thought leaders. And so when you read an article like that, and one of the commenters said, oh yeah, Chris Martinson was onto this, you know, a month ago, so this isn't really news. I thought, wow, well, let's pick up the phone and let's call Chris and let's talk about this and find out what he thinks. And I just love being in a position in our lives where we have the ability to have those types of conversations and to have guys like Chris be willing to not only take our call, but to turn the microphone on and let us share those conversations with our audience.
Chris Martinson is a PhD. He's a scientist. He's a brilliant guy. And his work revolves around the three E's. And if you've heard him on our show before, you kind of understand that. But a big part of his message is the fact that we live on a planet, which is a confined, limited space. And yet, countries and companies are always looking to increase growth, increase revenue, double production. And the point they make at Peak Prosperity is you can't just continue to base everything on a never-ending increase when we live on a planet of finite resources. And that intersects in a lot of places. But today we've got Chris on the program to address not only what's happening in the monetary system and negative interest rates and the Fed and all of that, but really talking about how we face and embrace chaos and change and turn it into opportunity. When we come back, you'll meet Dr. Chris Martinson on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Do you have a self-directed IRA invested in a syndication? Guess what? It's a ticking time bomb. Why? Because IRAs get hit with UBIT taxes, even Roth IRAs. Hi, I'm Damian Lupo, and we fix this problem for you forever. It gets even better because using the EQRP, you can literally get rid of taxes from all of your gains forever and protect your nest egg. The EQRP is the best vehicle to get it done. IRAs can't do it, not even Roth IRAs. You see, UBIT happens whenever any type of IRA invests in anything with debt. Don't worry, even if your IRA is already invested in a deal, we can kill that tax. Our team at Total Control Financial is here to give you control of your retirement money and free you from that deadly IRA tax forever. Want to learn more about the EQRP? Send an email to eqrp@realestateguysradio.com. I'll email you my special report and send you a copy of the QRP book. Paying a 37% UBIT tax is stupid. First step to getting rid of that tax is to send an email to eqrp@realestateguysradio.com today.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms. And if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits. The beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforest, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Hi, this is Kevin Harrington, an original shark from the hit TV show Shark Tank, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. Thanks so much for tuning into the show today, and Happy New Year. We're right here at the beginning of 2020, all kinds of things going on. And we're talking today about some interesting moves and when it comes to the Federal Reserve and monetary policy and all kinds of stuff, and it really is above our pay grade. So we thought we'd bring in a brilliant guy and a great friend. Please welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, Dr. Chris Martinson. Hey, Chris.
Hey there, Robert and Russ. So good to be back with you all, and Happy New Year, 2020. Yeah. Can you believe it? The 2020s. Here we are.
It's crazy. It's just crazy.
New decade.
I know.
I loved your post about starting with a blast.
Yeah, unfortunately, all too true. And it's going to be a very interesting year.
It is. And I think that's part of the thing, right? We're looking at all kinds of stuff out there as real estate investors and as inhabitants of the planet. There certainly is the big picture and all the talk of, you know, World War III and all the craziness. And at the same time, there is this big shift, I think, in awareness of the very financial system that our country and our world is based on. And you've got some thoughts on that. Give us the big picture and where you see this shift and this transition.
Well, this is now a world of, by, and for the central bankers. You know, they got themselves into a lot of trouble with Bubble One in 2000, and they bailed themselves out and everybody else with 1% blowout rates. Hey, that gave us a housing bubble. I know your listeners are all very familiar with that. That blew up. And then, of course, we got back down to 0% rates. And this time it was global and coordinated. So the ECB was in on it, and the Bank of Japan, and the US Federal Reserve. So all the central bankers had this emergency, but the emergency never went away. We had a little dip in stock prices in 2011, and that scared them again. So, oops, more money was printed. And then we had a little emergency in 2013 because stocks were going to go down, and oops, more printing. And then most people are unaware of this, but the largest printing in the series to now was 2016 and 17, when theoretically everything was okay and they're telling us everything's okay and unemployment's really low, but they were still printing at emergency level. So people like myself and the people I hang out with were going, what's the emergency? And the emergency seems to be if there's ever anything that goes in reverse. You know, markets come and they go. Sometimes things get ahead of themselves. There's an in and an out, a breathing that should happen. But the central banks are hip deep now, or eyeball deep, I should say, I guess, in this idea that nothing can ever go backwards or retreat. So it's a constant inflation that's going on. And so that's really where we are. And it's really a story of, by, and for the central bankers. And it's all around this one idea: money printing. And that's what they've been doing.
And there is an amazing amount of money printing, not just US dollars, but virtually all the central banks are printing like crazy. And the interesting thing about it is it doesn't manifest immediately. You know, folks like yourself sound the alarm and people are saying, well, all this printing, but the average person doesn't really notice. And I think that's maybe the point.
Well, it is. It's very well hidden. I just got off the phone before I came on here with a very good friend of mine. He's really savvy. He follows the news very closely. And he was confused. He said, how are the markets up this morning? Iran just, you know, lobbed some missiles. I thought the markets would be down. And I said, well, you have to understand the Federal Reserve has poured about $200 billion into the markets in the last 2 days. And he said, what are you talking about? I follow the news closely. I haven't heard anything about that. So it's not well advertised and it's not talked about. You have to kind of dig. And there is a group of us that, you know, follow this news because we think it's important. But for the average person, it's never presented that way. The headlines are stocks pair losses after scare, right? That's what you'll hear. But you won't hear that pairing losses is not the same thing as a rigged fight. You know, like in the WWF ring, somebody wins, somebody loses. And you have to really suspend some disbelief to think that that was a fair contest. You know, same thing for our markets. If they were let to go to be free and fair, they would clearly be a lot lower than they are right now. And it's this daily, sometimes hourly, interventions by central banks that's keeping everything elevated.
Well, that's such a good point. And, you know, you certainly have been a proponent of talking about the way that treasuries get bought and sold and the effect that has. And, you know, part of the interesting part, and we talked about this a little bit at the beginning of the show, is just this idea that there's a circumvention in that regard. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, the way this is supposed to work, so we're getting a little bit into the plumbing of all of this, but when the Federal Reserve was established in 1913, it was established by an act of Congress. It's not a federal institution, even though it says Federal Reserve. It is a private banking cartel that's got a government-sponsored entity kind of a feel, like Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. You know, is it government? Is it private? It's kind of both. So the Federal Reserve is kind of both, and it has to operate by the rules of its charter, though, and the rules of the Federal Reserve Act. And one of those very important rules, which was put in, and for good reason, is that the Federal Reserve is not allowed to directly monetize U.S. debt. So that would be the Treasury Department selling a Treasury bill. It needs another $1 billion, so it floats $1 billion out, and for the Fed to just buy them straight from the Treasury Department. The Fed is by law supposed to go out and participate in what's called the open market. So once these Treasury bills are issued by the Treasury Department, they're out there. Deutsche Bank owns some, JPM owns some, you know, Fannie Mae might buy some for some reasons, you name it, right? So they're out there, and then the Fed is supposed to compete and bid for those and buy them at a fair price on the open market. But that's not what is really what's been happening. That's the letter of the law. And I think the Fed is still following the letter, but the spirit completely violated. And the example would be that these bills are now issued. They might come out on a Monday, and the Federal Reserve will buy those exact same bills hours later in the, air quotes time, open market from JP Morgan, or for instance, who might have held those bills for an hour. So the Fed is really taking what's brand new government paper straight off the hot presses and pulling it in and issuing thin air money, meaning they just clickety-clickety-clack, type it up on their keyboard, control P, print, out it goes. So this is not how this is supposed to be working. So the Federal Reserve is now directly monetizing U.S. government debt. If they didn't do that, everything would be different. But this is really the story that you find in Venezuela, Zimbabwe, all kinds of places. And yes, the U.S. is different from those countries. But we are now at the part of this story where our central bank is directly monetizing debt, and nobody's talking about it. But it's really important.
Well, you know, Chris, I think that kind of begs the question, why?
Why is this so important? Why are they, you know, effectively circumventing the law? I mean, you know, they're breaking the spirit of it, but obeying maybe the letter of it. But why are they doing this?
I think because they feel they have to. Part of this is just sort of the camel's nose under the tent. You know, they started with little light interventions 20 years ago, and now it's just anything goes, you know, and this is what they feel they have to do. But the question we should be asking ourselves is, what does it mean that the Fed feels it has to be buying what amounts to 40% of all new government debt coming off hot off the presses? Well, what if they had to buy 80%? Or what about 100%, 110%, right? What that's the road we're on, and it's been getting more and more and more like that as time has gone on. The Fed has had to do more and more and more as time has gone on. And so the story we're being told is, hey, we got this under control. The markets are stable. Stocks are rising. The bond markets are quiet. All of that's what we're being told. But underneath there, the reason this is important is we're seeing the Fed have to do more and more and more, which is what we would predict at the end of a credit bubble. The Fed is going to eventually not be able to do that, or do it and it won't have the impact they thought, because every last crevice of society is full of debt. We've scraped past the bottom of the barrel. Things that shouldn't have debt, you know, are taking on debt, and entities, people, corporations. One example, 12%, one in eight companies now in the entire universe of companies is a zombie company, meaning that their operating income flows are not sufficient to even make their debt payments. Now, how does a zombie company stay alive, so to speak? Well, they have to keep rolling their debt over. They have to keep borrowing more and more. So as long as those credit markets have tons of money in them, these companies can keep, you know, zombieing along, dragging their leg as they move along. But if the Fed stopped doing what they're doing and that money dried up, these companies, one in eight, would actually go out of business instantly because they are insolvent and on their way to bankruptcy. So that's the world we live in, and I think people need to know about it.
Yeah, I think that's what Peter Schiff talks about when he talks about the economy being addicted to cheap money. They can't survive without it. So I have this other theory, and you tell me what you think about this. You know, bonds and interest rates are inverse of each other. And obviously prices, when you get a bid, when somebody's in the market buying, the price goes up, which would drive yields, interest rates down. Right now, the world is awash in debt, as you say, and if the bid were to be withdrawn, the net result would be a rise in interest rates and then a collapse in bond values. My theory is, if that happened with all of the leverage built in, the way people hypothecate their bonds, if bond values were to drop, there'd be just cash calls left and right. It's kind of what we saw happen in 2008. Is that kind of one of the motivations behind why the Fed appears to be so desperate to continue to keep the bid on bonds?
Yeah, you know, somebody that I met and really respected a lot, former Dow Theory Letter writer, Richard Russell, he talked about it as inflate or die. And that's really what they're stuck in. And the dynamic you're talking about here, which Richard identified 20 years ago, 30 years ago, is that this thing is either growing or collapsing. And the dynamic you just outlined is exactly what happens. So as long as we can keep this thing moving forward and expanding, it all keeps working. But the minute you get those cash calls, the minute company A can't meet its debt obligations and it folds, and then that has a domino effect, and next thing you know, it's multiple dominoes hitting each other for a chain reaction, and it spreads, that's what the Fed's afraid of. They're afraid of this whole thing falling apart and collapsing. So they're thinking, that's pretty bad. Maybe we should just keep printing. But the part that's missing from this story is, well, for how long? And how will we know when it's over? What's the exit strategy? And the longer they've been doing this, it's been giving us some what we would call collateral damage or unintended consequences, which is it's driving the largest wealth gap we've ever had, right? 40% of homes have $0 in the bank, right? That's been getting worse and worse and worse, even as the Fed's driving the stock market higher and higher and higher. Why? Because those homes don't have any exposure to stocks. Meanwhile, Jeff Bezos is piling on $10, $20, $30 billion a day to his personal net worth, and that's the dynamic that the Fed has been fueling and pretending as if they weren't doing that, but that has social consequences. That has political consequences. If you want to understand why Trump got elected and you don't understand the thing I just talked about, it's probably a mystery. But it's really not. You know, every time the Fed prints money, they are rewarding some participants in the game and they're punishing others. They are not a wealth-generating machine. When they print up money, $1 billion comes out of their keyboards, yeah, that's real purchasing power. I mean, if that landed in your bank account, buy a yacht, buy a country, buy a company, buy a jet, it's real purchasing power, but you can't print purchasing power. So where did the purchasing power come from? Well, it came from everybody else who holds money. They're the ones getting squeezed. My healthcare premiums went up 23% this year on top of everything from all the prior years. You know, you look at rents going up for people and you look at the homelessness and stuff going on in San Francisco, you say, those are the unintended consequences in this story. That's the stuff nobody's really talking about. We are, but I mean, in society, it's just front page of Yahoo Finance today is like, stocks went up, and there's like, what a mystery. Like, oh, who can explain gravity? Hard to say, right? But these dots are actually easy to connect. The Fed prints money, they steal purchasing power from everybody, and they hand it to increasingly fewer and fewer people. So they are social engineers more than they are actually monetary technicians.
And it's not new. This has been happening since there was a US dollar, and we've seen the purchasing power erode over 100+ years, and people get used to it. Oh, Starbucks used to be a dollar, and now it's $4.50. And before you know it, well, my wages went up too. But it's this dilution of the dollar I think not everybody understands. Now, I agree with all of that, except we're all in favor of rents going up for real estate. Other than that, right, not so much. No, but seriously, as real estate investors, our target audience, right, our product is based on the ability to borrow. Certainly, you can buy real estate free and clear. But the fact that you can leverage real estate is one of the big attractions to it, that I might put 20% of the money down but get 100% of the appreciation. And there is a difference between inflated equity and true appreciation. And that's something we focus on. And you certainly understand that as much as you guys talk about and participate in things like farmland. When you take a piece of property like the one you're acquiring and you put in the effort and turn the soil and all the great produce that comes out of that, you've appreciated the value completely independent of inflation of the dollar. But if I just buy a house and dollar inflates and my house is worth more, is it really? So we have the stock market at an all-time high and real estate markets are high in a lot of places, but is anyone wealthier is the big question. And I think the hard question, and the reason that we want to pick your brain on this, not that you have a crystal ball, but you've been pretty amazing at getting us to think through a lot of this stuff, is where does this end? I mean, what happens as we get to the point, and you've mentioned many times, certainly on our summit and in your writings, that we've been close a couple of times, right? And then we did a show a few months back about the whole repo thing. And what happens? What's the eventuality of the continuous printing of money?
Well, here's the once upon a time in my lifetime, and certainly my father's and grandfather's lifetime, you would have had something called a business cycle. And the business cycle is pretty easy to understand. You know, you can understand this as a real estate investor, right? So an area gets hot, people start to get excited, prices get a little ahead of themselves, companies get a little ahead of themselves, they start hiring a few too many people because everything looks like it's going great. And then, oops, you know, you have the inevitable recession because some of those investments, not all of them, not even most of them, but if some of them weren't good ideas. We decided to put in 200 seats for our taco stand. Oops, you know, that was a bad investment. We can only ever fill 20 of them, right? So the only thing that's left in a business cycle is you get that retreat of the tide and all those bad decisions get washed out. And they were pretty frequent, 3, 4, 5 years, kind of like clockwork, right? Because it's a normal dynamic. With a credit cycle, it's a very different beast. And we've had one in 2000, one in 2007. We're in our third one, only this one's bigger. And they're different for a couple reasons. One, with 0% rates like we have right now, nobody knows how do you price anything? What's something worth, right? Money's supposed to have value. In fact, for $10 trillion of unfortunate money out there, money has a negative value. You have to pay the government of Germany to lend it money for a while, right? It's just crazy. Nobody knows how to make sense of that, and all kinds of stupid things get done. Dumb decisions get made. But the difference is with a credit cycle, when, not if, but when, it's lights out on those things. The lights go out very quickly. We saw that in 2008. One day everything was fine. Next day everything seemed like it was almost like literally collapsing. And so the pain of credit cycles is a lot deeper because more dumb decisions get made and those all have to be unwound. And so things kind of go in reverse and it's awkward. So that's, I think, what people need to be aware of is that dynamic and that it'll be quick. It'll be nasty, brutish, and hopefully short, but history says that credit cycles really, really hurt. And, you know, we could look at China, for an example. I'm not picking on the U.S., right? They have price-to-income ratios in many of their key cities that are over 30, over 40, right? You get to 8, and I'm starting to feel really uncomfortable. 10, definite bubble. What do you do with a number like 30 or 40?
Right.
You know,
right.
You either wait for incomes to go up by a huge amount, or which they can't, or the property prices have to adjust at some point very painfully, right? For the banking system, for the people involved, for the governments. Nobody likes it. But you shouldn't have got into that trouble in the first place. And if people want to see just one chart that sort of explains the whole thing, consider our GDP or gross domestic product. That's the income in this story. And it's growing at one rate. And on top of that, you would look at the total debt of the United States, and it's growing at a rate that's twice as high. It has been doing that for about 40 years, ever since we abandoned the gold standard in 71. And I guess that's coming on 50 years now. So when you look at that, all you have to do is say, is it possible? Is it possible for debt to grow at twice the rate of income forever? And the answer is clearly no. You can't do it. I can't do it. The two of us together can't do it. The three of us together can't do it, which means a whole town of us can't do it, which means this nation can't do it, right? It's just, it's a fractal idea that just doesn't make sense at any level. But that's the system the Fed's trying to preserve, this idea that we can compound our debts at more than twice the rate of our income forever. And so you ask, what does that mean? Well, what it means is that when that breaks, they tend to break very, very suddenly. With all that said, you're talking to somebody who's a very active real estate investor at this point in time, and it's one of the asset classes I'm most bullish on right now, along a range of hard assets. That's how you protect yourself in this story, is you get out of that paper money game, and you got to make sure you're really tight on the hard assets game. And I would counsel, of course, you know, making sure that your cash flows are good and you've got a little buffer there and you're not riding right on the edge and, you know, you're in prime places that you can make sense out of. I would not be buying strip malls that are far away from city centers right now, like most people. But, you know, when you just look at the larger trends, there are certain investments in there that still make a lot of sense. I actually think we're at the beginning of the largest back to the land movement in our country's history, way bigger than the hippies in the 60s for a whole set of complicated reasons. So I'm actually very bullish, and I've just recently got offers accepted on really nice tracts of land, pretty extensive by my standards, tracts of land. So that's where I'm headed with all this.
Our guest is Chris Martinson, thepeakprosperity.com. We'll have more when we come back. Plus, we're going to give away one of Chris's great books next on Real Estate Trivia. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Real Estate Guys listeners, are you tired of losing real estate deals due to financing issues? Have you had enough of waiting on banks, lenders, and investor groups to fund new projects? What if there were a way to eliminate all the hassle and invest in real estate on your own terms? I'm here to tell you there is. Patrick Donahoe here from Paradigm Life. I'm an Investopedia top 100 most influential financial advisor, and I recently wrote a best-selling book about the financial strategy that changed my entire investment model and the one that could change yours. To get a copy of my book for free and learn how you can maximize your real estate portfolio by acting as your own bank, send an email to mybank@realestateguysradio.com. Don't make another real estate deal without reading my book first. Email mybank@realestateguysradio.com now to get your copy for free.
Hey, this is Gene from the Residential Assisted Living Academy. Making money, cash flow, is important. Doing it for the right reasons with a heart is even more important. If you'd like to learn more about turning a single family home into a cash flow machine, earning $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 net or more per month, well, I'd like to share that with you. Our motto is do good and do well. There is a silver tsunami of seniors coming, and you have a huge opportunity. Take advantage of it.
To gain access to an informational webinar presented by certified financial planner and real estate entrepreneur Gene Guarino and discover how you can turn a nice home in a nice neighborhood into a cash flow machine, send an email to ALF, A-L-F, at realestateguysradio.com. That's A-L-F at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Lawrence Yun, Chief Economist with National Association of Realtors, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. We're talking about facing chaos and opportunity in the new decade. Before we get back to our interview with Chris Martinson, it's time to play Real Estate Trivia, your chance to win a prize by knowing today's Real Estate Trivia question. Just a minute, I'll give you a question that has something to do with real estate. When you think you know the answer, send your best guess to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Trivia at realestateguysradio.com. You want to include your name, the answer to the question, and your physical mailing address, because the first person that gets it right is going to get a copy of Prospered by Adam Taggart and Chris Martinson, signed by both the authors. Autographed copy can be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week was our first show of the new decade. We talked about the top real estate trends for 2020, and we asked this: how many acres are in a section? Well, under the public land survey system in the U.S., a section is an area that is nominally 1 square mile, which contains 640 acres, or 260 hectares. So that's a section, 640 acres. By the way, 36 sections make up 1 survey township. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. Which U.S. state grows the most sweet potatoes? Yeah, you know, sweet potatoes. Yummy. Which state in the U.S. grows the most? If you think you know or just want to guess, send your best guess to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Give us your name, your guess, and your mailing address. So if you're the first with the right answer, you'll get an autographed copy of Prosper. That's today's real estate trivia question. We're with Dr. Chris Martinson from peakprosperity.com and the co-author of that great book, Prosper. Now, when you and Adam Taggart wrote that book, Chris, I'll tell you what, I read it, and it's one of the, I would say, the few books that really rocked me to take immediate action. You know, you read a book and you get a good idea and maybe you implement that into your world, but you guys really came up with some tangible solutions of things you can do. Talk a minute about kind of the idea behind Prosper.
Well, sure. You know, I started this whole thing out with the Crash Course, which is this problem definition, which basically, as we were talking about in the prior segment, you can't grow your debts faster than income forever, right? That's sort of the problem definition. So the conclusion of that is, well, then what do I do about that? And the answer is I can't do anything about what my nation intends to do about growing its debts faster than its income. But I can personally understand that that's going to have an impact at some point. I don't know when. And there are things I can do to prepare. So Prosper is all about the solution space, which just fundamentally answers one question, which is, what should I do? Right. And we've talked about a couple of elements, but, you know, whatever people's orientation, if you're looking what's happening ecologically, there's some really concerning things there. If you look at what's happening in the energy space, the way I do very deeply, there's some really concerning things happening there. So Prosper asks the question, well, what should I do? And he answers it by saying, well, listen, build up your forms of capital. I'll get to that in a second. But the idea is that you want to be as resilient as you can be and maybe even living as regeneratively as you can be. Meaning that the systems and things you put in place actually improve on themselves over time. So, for instance, I might garden in a way where because I'm doing that, the soil just improves every single year and just regeneratively gets better. So financial capital is one of 8 forms of capital we talk about. We focus a lot on it, really important. You want to get that one buttoned up and buttoned down. You know, to give an example there, we would say, you know, have a really good budget, really understand your own cash flows, have your own personal balance sheet, know what it is, and then develop multiple income streams. Because, you know, you don't want to be that person who's only got a single paycheck, it goes away, your whole life is upended, right? So very entrepreneurial approaches that we support there. But none are so poor as those who only have money. So we talk about 7 other forms of capital and social capital, really important. Not just how many people do you know, but how well do you know them? We were interviewing an author a few years ago, Philip Haslin. He wrote a book about what happened in Zimbabwe. You know, went through this punishing hyperinflation. We've all seen the $100 trillion notes, you know. But he went there and asked the question, who thrived, who survived, and who didn't? And the answer was resoundingly, those who thrived were actually those who had the best social networks and connections. Because everything was still available, but you had to know people, you had to be able to trust people. And that was really the determining factor.
Hey, Chris, you know, we just came through the holiday season, and my favorite movie of all time is It's a Wonderful Life. And yeah. For anybody that's ever watched that movie, they know that at the very end, George Bailey, the star of the show played by James Stewart, was desperately broke, and he was up against the wall because he had misplaced $8,000, and at that time, it was a lot of money. And what came to the rescue was a lifetime of him sowing goodwill and building a huge tribe, a huge network of people that liked him, believed in him. And when he needed help, they were there for him. And I think that's just a classic example of what you're talking about in terms of how social capital can really be at your back and be an asset for you in tough times.
Well, a great example. And that's exactly right. And if you happen to have a deep social network like that, you're more resilient, you know, and hopefully you never really have to tap it the way George Bailey did, but you are far more resilient than somebody who doesn't have that network. And, you know, we live today in a society that's very isolated. The number one thing people show up to our seminars and report in on is, hey, I feel all alone. I feel isolated, right? And so, you know, we're using this problem definition context to give people a little nudge and say, yep, and you don't have to accept that, and you can do things about that, and hear some ideas, and really encouraging each other to go out and, you know, join groups and volunteer and raise your hand and say yes when things need to be done, and all those things that do build that social capital. Yeah, if you've got financial capital and social capital, you're now starting to get really resilient, like in your example with George Bailey. But it goes beyond that. So living capital is my own personal health in my body, or the garden I just talked about with its deepening soil. Having that, I think, makes me more resilient, also happier today, and healthier. And all those are really good things. So as we stretch out across that, you know, there are five other forms of capital in this story. And our view is that if you're rich across all of those, you are not only happier today, but you're much more prepared for almost anything that could come in the future, especially compared to people who are alone and isolated and haven't managed their money well and, you know, all those things. So that's really the approach that we've taken. And you know, Robert, really glad to hear that it had an impact on you. And we've heard from a number of people that's been the case for them as well. Just sort of snap things into focus. It makes sense. Why wouldn't I do this? Is actually, you know, I think what it boils down to.
You know, it's interesting that as we've gotten to know each other and spend time and, you know, have this overlay of our tribes, it's been really cool. We had a chance to attend your seminar, your annual event last year, and meet a lot of your tribe, awesome people. And again, when people come together who think they're alone and then all of a sudden they find their tribe, it's extraordinary. And of course, you and Adam have been on our Investor Summit now for several years. And that really is what that has become, a tribe, a community where people can have these conversations. It's not only front of the room conversations, it's the conversations at the breaks and just ideas. Hey, here's what I'm doing. What do you think about that? And I think that's where it really starts to be a two-way method of communication, not just, I mean, you can read for sure and you can listen to podcasts and you should do all of that. But at some point, you got to banner these ideas around.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love my own seminar for those reasons that you talked about. We, you know, it gives people the opportunity to meet and feel not alone and talk freely about things that otherwise not polite conversation for their local environment. But truthfully, I've made more incredible deep connections at the Summit at Sea because of just how it's structured, the container you set, the fact that we're, you know, you're all together on a boat for so many days in a row, possibly also because I'm not in presenter mode, which you well both know that it's a different role to be in. So for myself, I've really enjoyed, you know, going and being faculty presenting at Summit at Sea, but then being able to interact with people in a really deep way over dinner, over lunch, in the hallways. Yeah, that's been just fantastic for me.
Yeah, it's been great to watch how you have done exactly that. A lot of the ideas that you've gleaned from people there, you put into practice. And that's really, you know, our whole motto is education for effective action. There's a lot of folks that just want to learn and talk and understand, and that's the first level. But then you got to do something with it. You know, after reading Prosper, where I sat down with my family, we talked about our social connections in our neighborhood and have worked really strong on building those. We built up a deep pantry. We're getting close to growing 3% of our food. I mean, all the things you talk about that are just little steps. And I think when you're presenting the problem, and, you know, you were just with us at the New Orleans Investment Conference, and there's a bunch of, you know, successful investors, mostly accredited folks, and you're giving them the quote-unquote doom and gloom, the problem that mm-hmm. we live on a finite planet and we don't have unlimited resources. But you always put it in a context that there is something you can do instead of just saying, oh, it's all going down and everything's going to be awful. It's, well, okay, if that were to happen, how do I prepare myself? You know, we did a show with you, and folks can look up in the archive about this, on emotional capital, one of the ones we didn't mention. But if you've got, you know, a lot of money and a lot of land and a lot of neighbors, but you can't handle the stress and the challenges,
Well, that's a whole nother form of capital. So I think today, really, the show is about getting our mind around what's happening financially and hoping that things work out, but being prepared in case they don't. And I think that's really what's missing. There's a lot of folks who are talking about the problem, not as many talking about potential solutions.
Yeah, because it can seem a little overwhelming, and I get it. You know, it's very complex and complicated, two separate terms there. And so a lot of people might feel, well, what? Geez, there's nothing I can really do about that. But that's not true. And we're very much aligned in a lot of ways. And one of them is we start with education. Like, until you actually understand what the predicaments are, and you know, if you don't understand the money system, good luck trying to decode what's happening, right? So there's really some basic education, but that's only useful if you're going to do something with it. And so that's the part I think people instinctively believe is missing, and that's not the case. There are lots of things that we can do and that we should be doing. And, you know, I'm going to be really chronicling this over the next couple of years as I bring a place from a really raw, beautiful, you know, homestead kind of estate into a fully resilient homestead that's operating regeneratively across all kinds of different systems, right? Because I want people to see that. I want to put that out there so people have a model and understand two things. It's possible, and it's something you'll love doing if you're built at all like me. It's fun. You know, and it's a really high quality life. And I can't do anything about Australia burning down right now. But I can live with a lower impact, and I can live in a way that's far more regenerative and sustainable. And I can do it also, critically, surrounded by incredible, immense beauty. And so I really feel like this has given me the opportunity to really begin to live rather than sort of live into the life that's sort of handed to you. This is what consumer life looks like, you know, and your neighbor's over there. You don't make eye contact when you both get the mail at the same time. And, you know, we do our work and all that. This is different. This has given me the chance to step up and say, what can I really do? How can I really give back? How am I going to be the leader of as much as I can be, given the gifts I've got? As a friend of mine, Michael, says that he feels like this era is calling us to greatness. And I find myself rising to that challenge and being stretched in ways that give me meaning and purpose. I'm actually quite excited by what's going on right now.
You know, I think that hard times always bring out the best in people, bring out the best in communities, I think bring out the best in the race. It's not always easy. But one thing that I've picked up that I've learned in my life and what I think I hear you saying, Chris, is that it's really important for everyone that's listening to this to recognize that you need to really take control of the things that you can control so that you're better positioned to react to the things that you can't control. There's a lot of things going on in the world that we can't control. And there was a season in my life where I spent a lot of my time worrying about those things and being frustrated about those things and bickering or complaining about those things. Then I woke up one day and realized, you know what, that's a bunch of negative energy that's not helping me get anywhere. What I really need to do is look at what I can do and get busy doing that. And a funny thing happened along the way. I realized that all of a sudden I was better positioned to deal with the things that I couldn't control when they came at me. And I had access to a lot more resources, mostly intellectual. I mean, you know, when we have questions about what's going on in the bond market, the reason we did this interview is we read an article and it talked about the Fed monetizing the debt. And then I thought, well, who really knows a lot about that? Oh, Chris Martinson. Hey, Robert, let's get Chris Martinson on a call and talk to him about that. And of course, the conversation took a little bit of a turn, which I really appreciate, Robert, which is, you know, knowing that there's problems out there that are way beyond our pay grade to maybe even understand, but certainly to solve. What can we do? And I think that that really needs to be the lesson for everybody. Control the things that you can control so that you're better positioned to deal with the things that you can't.
Oh, exactly right.
You know, Chris does a lot of great work on his site at peakprosperity.com. And in fact, you guys have just done a really cool video called What the Fed? Mike Maloney's on that, Grant Williams. Talk about that real quick, Chris, because I think that could be another resource for people to kind of get their mind around part of the financial problem.
Oh, yeah. So this is like my, you know, one of my own personal all-star lineups that Adam threw together that I got to participate in, because Grant Williams is just like one of the nicest, smartest people you're ever going to meet. He's got a really good beat on things. And Charles Hugh Smith is on there. He's just such a wonderful, wonderful gentleman and scholar and very, very thoughtful. And, you know, you put all this together into a spot and really begin to talk about what's going on with the Fed and having the insights of all these crew really bearing down on this and all really coming to the same sort of conclusion, which is what the Fed is up to is really, really unusual. And you need to know about it because it's kind of a binary experiment. They either succeed or they're going to fail, you know? And so we're all hopeful that they succeed, I guess, but what happens if they fail? And so that was just a great thing that we got put together, and we did that with Mike Maloney too. And so Gold Silver produced the video around that. They just did a really incredible job from a production standpoint. Big shout out to Dan, who's working on that. So we're really pleased to be able to offer content like that and to see the quality improvement that's coming along as we learn and as we grow and get better at this.
You can learn about that and all the great things that Chris and Adam do at peakprosperity.com. Also, their seminar has just opened registration. That happens the first weekend in May. We'll certainly be there, and you're going to want to be at that event. And of course, the Summit at Sea in June this year, 2020. So there's still time to get your cabin and hang out with Chris and Adam and the real estate guys and an amazing faculty for more than a week, where we banter around the big ideas and we also have some real great fellowship and camaraderie. So Chris, as always, thank you so much for your time and your intellect and everything you do to make us understand what's happening in the world.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody listening. Happy 2020, and hope to do it again soon.
There's Chris Martinson. More when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
When it comes to successful rental property investing, it pays to be picky. Pick the right markets, pick profitable properties, and pick great property management. That's easier said than done, but we've got great news. Jerry Kerr and his rockstar team at Mid-South Homebuyers are going strong in Memphis, Tennessee, and Little Rock, Arkansas, too. So for a top-notch turnkey single-family home rental property, whether you're a new investor or have a large portfolio already, pick Terry Kerr and Mid-South for a truly A-plus investing experience. To learn more, send an email to midsouth@realestateguysradio.com. That's midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Garrett Sutton, Rich Dad's advisor. Remember, equity happens, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio show. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Tell a friend about The Real Estate Guys. Oh my gosh, it is always a good day when we get to hang out with Chris Martinson.
Yeah, Chris is just a super smart guy, and he's super pragmatic. And you know what I love about him, and I think most successful smart people that I've met, is they're very confident in the thing they're confident about, but they're also very curious and humble in the things they want to learn about. And off mic, Chris was just talking a little bit about how he had taken his desire to do some things at a larger scale in his own personal real estate investing, but he was limited, as most of us are, by the availability of capital. And he went out to his tribe and he shared, and he was able to syndicate a pretty good sized deal. And so that is something that he was able to learn from hanging out with us. And so we learn from each other. You know, the lesson there for anybody listening is that you're an expert in something. You know how to do something pretty well. You're connected to somebody that's probably pretty successful, pretty important, pretty intelligent. And that's a chip you can play to get into relationships with other people so that you have a seat at the table and you get a chance to learn. So really been enjoying the relationship with Chris and Adam over at Peak Prosperity over these many years, and love hearing his perspectives on things.
Yeah, and you know, some of it is disturbing. You're talking about the fact that there are negative interest rates. How do you make sense of that? The fact that the Fed is essentially bypassing, you know, the law and where that might go. And nobody knows how it's going to play out. But but we all can smell something coming. And I think when we get a chance to hang out with Chris and Adam and Peter Schiff and Robert Kiyosaki and all those folks we talked about in the newsletter this week, that it is precious, precious time, because not anybody has all the puzzle pieces. But when you get smart people together, this person has a piece, that person has a piece, and even more so, you have that interaction, that play. And when I was at the Peak Prosperity Seminar, they call their annual event a seminar, and it's a two-day event, and I got to speak and meet the people, and I was there for both days, and it was extraordinary. I mean, they talked about the 8 forms of capital, but not only that, at the breaks, you're interacting with people that are doing the thing. Hey, this guy just figured out how to completely light up his home off the grid. Everyone wants to talk to that guy. They had a guy talk about self-defense who was a 30-plus year police veteran, and he gave some great practical things on just situational awareness. There was a optional field trip, literally, to go out to an organic farm that was phenomenal. And so getting, you know, you couldn't get that from a video or from a book. You know, and as we talked about, you got to read books and you got to watch videos and you got to listen to podcasts. But at some point, it is that personal connection. And it's great that a guy who is a brainiac PhD also has a real understanding for how important community is.
Yeah, well, you know, I like the idea of using books and podcasts and radio shows and seminars as a way to find out who I want to build a relationship with. That's the preliminary, that's the first cut. And then when they have interesting things to say, it's like, okay, how can I get into a relationship with the person? Obviously, it's a little easier for us because we have the show as a platform and it's a bridge. But, you know, however you choose to do it, you know, you show up where these people show up. It's one of the reasons we create the Summit at Sea. You know, it's an opportunity for people. It's high barrier to entry, but think about the people that are in the room because of that. You know, a couple hundred people that have paid a lot of money to be there, that are sacrificing or investing, 10 days of their time with travel and getting on the ship and the things we do in the hotel before we get on the ship. And as Chris mentioned, one of the things that's great about that is a lot of these super smart people that are used to carrying the entire show themselves, that are in presentation mode, suddenly are only doing a bit part. And they're sitting on panels where they really don't have to prepare. They just get to talk, you know, improvisationally and interacting with each other, which is one of my favorite things on the summit. It's a light load for the panelists because they just get to talk with each other. They really enjoy it because they get to talk with each other. And everybody in the room gets to hear what they have to say and actually participate in the conversation. But they get a lot of downtime, too. So now there's the dinner conversations and the conversations in the hallway and on the beach and all the different places, the bars that we hang out in on the summit. So to me, the summit or events like the summit are opportunities for people. If you're out there and you say, hey, I don't have a tribe. You know, I don't have the right crew. You know, if right now the crap hit the fan and I needed to go to people who, you know, really understand what's going on in the world, that can give me good ideas, that are well connected, that are prepared, I don't have anybody. You can get a lot done in just 1 week on the Summit at Sea in terms of building those relationships. And whether it's on the Summit at Sea or Chris and Adam's, you know, two-day event or something that you find or put together on your own, the point is, as we go into this new decade, a decade of, I think many could say, is going to be a decade of chaos, which, of course, as we said, the flip side of chaos is opportunity, that the sooner you start investing time and money and energy into building those relationships and building that tribe and building your understanding, the better positioned you're going to be to navigate come what may.
You know, I think we're going to have an opportunity to get Chris back on the show and talk about the real estate deal you were alluding to. And we don't want to spill too many of the beans, but he was able to put together many of the elements of that based on folks that he met on the summit. And he shared that with us. And the very idea of syndicating real estate was foreign to him until he started hanging around us. The idea of having a deep pantry was pretty foreign to me until I read their book and started to get my mind and attended their seminar where everybody is more prepared than me. It's like, wow. And there, that's just the idea of expanding your horizon. I'm glad you brought up the point about the summit because it's one of the nuances. I remember the first time we had Robert Kiyosaki and Kim on the summit and we looked at the schedule and said, well, it's great that they're going to be here and it's amazing. And we only have an hour and a half for Robert and an hour for Kim. And that's it. But they loved it.
In a whole week.
Right, for in the week. And, you know, typically you think, wow, well, you'd have that guy on every day. But we have so many people. And we absolutely asked Chris and Adam to do a presentation, which they will. But even more so, every night at dinner, Chris and his wife, Evie, have their own table. And you get to hang out and talk about whatever. And he has a depth of knowledge. Meanwhile, a couple tables over, there's his partner, Adam Taggart, who has a different background, and yet they are cut from the same cloth in many ways, and there's great conversations happening over there, and then there's Peter Schiff and his wife Lauren at a table every night, and there's Robert Kiyosaki at a table every night, and there's you at a table, and I'm at a table, and all the faculty, and it is some of the most extraordinary conversations happen after you've been in class all day, when you're just kind of trying to sort through all that stuff around eager other students and teachers at your table.
Yeah, well, you know, you talk about the nuances, and a lot of people think it's about the information, but candidly, you can listen to their podcasts, you can visit their YouTube channels, you can read their books. The ideas and the information are interesting. But as I mentioned, that's really the table setting for you to be able to get into a real live interactive dialogue with these people when you have the opportunity to meet them. Most people never have the opportunity to meet them. But when you come on the summit or something like that, you go to where these people are in a position where they're not trying to carry the front of the room, where they're actually available to talk with you. That's really the magic. And then it's not just talking to the people who are, you know, the front of the room, the faculty, the stars of the show, if you will, but it's also all the other people. There are so many amazing people out there that are kind of like unsung heroes of success. You know, nobody really knows their name. They haven't written books. They don't have a YouTube channel. They're not doing podcasts, but they're out there just doing it in the real world every day, solving problems, building wealth, building resilience, being prepared. The thing is, successful people, in my experience, are all extremely willing to share. And I think, Robert, you do a masterful job as our MC on the Summit at Sea, creating an environment where people quickly become comfortable with each other. The culture is one of, hey, I can talk to people. Nobody's here trying to sell me anything or recruit me into anything. There's no hidden agenda. And it's just, again, a way to build quality relationships with quality people very quickly and process a lot of quality ideas and information at a deeper level. Because one of the ways you reinforce your learning is not just by taking it in, but it's by regurgitating it. It's by processing it and then putting it out in your own words and then relating it back to how it impacts you in your own personal life and your personal decisions. And at the same time, hearing how other people are taking the very same information and thinking about applying it in their life. And you pick up other nuances. So it's like a multifaceted diamond. There's just so many components to it. It's really hard to describe. And, you know, I know people sometimes get tired of hearing us go on and on and on about the Summit at Sea. But, you know, before you criticize us for doing that, just come once. Just come once and you tell us if it isn't everything we say it is and a whole lot more. I mean, this thing has become kind of a tradition, a legend, you know, a legendary event in the industry. It's got to be one of the premier financial conferences in the world. And what are we? This is number 18. Is that what it is?
It is the 18th annual Investors Summit at Sea coming up June 11th to the 20th. We'll depart from Fort Lauderdale. We'll spend a few days on land in the hotel, and then we'll get on a beautiful cruise ship. And it's extraordinary. You know, the fact that these amazing faculty members speak together, the panels that we do, and to hear them, I mean, yeah, you can listen to the Peak Prosperity podcast, you can listen to the Rich Dad radio show, you can listen to Peter Schiff's podcast, but to have all those guys talking together at the same time and bantering back and forth and rubbing their brains against each other and you being in the conversation, it's extraordinary. We didn't set out for this show to be a big promotion, but when Chris said that he made deeper relationships at our summit than even at his own event, I mean, that's just mind-blowing to me. And there's no reason that if you're serious about your future, you won't at least consider it. Just go to the website at realestateguysradio.com. You'll see the button that says Summit at Sea. We'd love to have you with us. We've got an amazing faculty again, a couple of new faculty members that are not yet announced, a couple of returning faculty members that are not yet announced, but many are going to be with us, and it's going to be extraordinary. Big thanks to Chris Martinson for taking time out of his insanely busy schedule to share with us today. If you're interested in not only what they do at Peak Prosperity, but this new video, What the Fed, which you're going to want to watch, all you have to do is send an email to WTF@realestateguysradio.com. WTF, What the Fed, @realestateguysradio.com. Next week, we're going to be transporting ourselves to one of the most beautiful places on earth and one of our favorite markets. We'll talk all about Belize. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723 extension 4. That's 888-489-7723 extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.